The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
TGIF, everybody. Thank God it's football season. We had the Hall of Fame game last night, so a little bit of action. Steve Gill along with Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long on this Friday, bring it till 7 o'clock this evening. An off day for the black and gold, so definitely haven't sweat so much, Jeff, and feeling refreshed going into today's show.
Yeah, I went for a run just to sweat because I was like, oh, this is weird. I haven't sweat out like 3 pounds of water, so I got to get out in the sun. But no, it's weird having an off day on just a regular day. That's why training camp is strange, because it's like practice, practice, practice.
Throws off
no practice and all, but it's like it's still a day.
Yeah.
And then practice Saturday, Sunday. But no, I do appreciate, and this is kind of like inside baseball a little bit, but the way, how much thought went into the creation of this training camp schedule, because it's not like, oh, let's just have an off day here, let's have an off day here. Like, you know, just for an example, they had the first two padded, so they had the first padded practice
Monday,
then an off day,
right?
Or then like the light day, the walkthrough day, and then they had two padded practices in a row. The first one was outside, the second one was a closed practice and inside. And the reason for that was because, hey, we had two padded practices this week out in the sun, we've had a lot of outdoor practices, let's give them a lighter practice indoors. So, you know, and you could see yesterday the energy was through the roof. Like, it was a great call. Like, it's just every decision is so intentional, and like there's a reason for everything. And even just having the day off today, like you had three padded practices this week. Yeah, okay, day off. You know, we'll get back after it Saturday, Sunday with two more padded practices. And I just think the attention to detail is very refreshing. And we've heard players talk about it. Like, this isn't just me. Basically, every player who's got up to the podium has talked about how much they appreciate the program and the, you know, focus on efficiency and rest and recovery, and everyone feels great.
The focus on rest and recovery has definitely been boasted a lot from the players. They're liking this a lot, what Kellen Moore and staff have instituted.
Yeah, and everyone usually talks about how great they feel in training camp, but not, you know, it's like everyone who gets up there's like, this is the best I've ever felt since high school or something like that. So, no, and we've seen very limited injury issues, and we have had a couple this week.
Right.
Juwan Johnson is the biggest concern, but he's dealing with a groin issue. He was back out at practice in a limited capacity. So that's a really good sign for him.
Right. It's not like we don't see him. So it's like, okay, we don't even know if he's close to getting back on the field. At least he was out there in the indoor facility yesterday in limited action.
Right. If he wasn't out there, it would have just been alarm bells because that's that position on this team. You know, when you consider Taysom Hill, Foster Moreau aren't there, it's one of the thinnest I've ever seen it. You have one guy and then... You know, I mean, as much as I like me some Jack Stahl, I don't want T1 Jack Stahl, right? I don't want Jack Stahl to be my only pass catching option or Michael Jacobson. Like, that gets thin real fast. So, he is probably the one player on this team, barring any moves, that they cannot afford to be without.
One thing that was interesting yesterday, you're going through attendance, checking off things on our roster sheet. Hunter Decker is no longer with the squad. He was waived, but the team did fill that spot with another punter. So we have one, two, three punters on this Saints roster right now. A little bit odd.
Kai Kroger. Which got to be feel weird for Kai Kroger to be wearing a Rouse's patch on his jersey. You know what I mean? It's spelled differently. So, you know, he's not heir to the Kroger fortune. But, it's Hunter Decker's. It's got to feel... It can't feel good to get cut.
Right, I got cut for a punter?
Not just for a punter, for a third. For a third punter. It's like getting laid off from work so they can afford to buy a new copier. Like, it's not a good feeling. Either way, like, I appreciate Hunter. You know, I think he's a guy who's going to keep working around. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the UFL, something like that, and kind of bounce around some rosters, some practice squads. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up on the Saints practice squad down the line if they want to get a fourth quarterback into the mix who kind of knows the offense to some degree. But no, the punter decision, you know, there's been two players added this week. You have Jonathan Mendoza, who was a teammate of Tyler Shuck.
He can't miss him.
At Louisville, he's 6'9". He's gigantic. And then Kai Kroger, who was a teammate of Spencer Rattler at South Carolina. So, you know, I don't think that's why you signed them, but, probably doesn't hurt to have some familiarity with the two most important players on the offense, right?
Used to have familiarity with Jordan Mims with Kaner, but he's the guy left out now with no Fresno State connection.
Right. He used to be all Fresno State. We used to have Fresno State up the wazoo, and now it's, you know, maybe they can go find Jordan again. Maybe we can find another former Bulldog. Maybe they can hire Lorenzo Neal to the staff, and that'll be it.
Did you get to watch the Hall of Fame game at all last night?
You know, I turned it on for a solid 45 seconds.
Wow.
And then, you know, I was like, football, baby. I'm going to take the night off. but it was good to see it out there. It was good to see that football as a sport still exists. You know, I know the Trey Lance got, like, more passes in that game than he has in his entire career. So
yeah,
good for him.
Some NFL analysts are like, oh, teams are QB thirsty, you might make a trade now with the Chargers for Trey Lance. And I was like, just pump the brakes a little bit,
maybe,
there, folks,
maybe,
please.
Yeah, no, I don't about that. I mean, he was the number 3 overall pick, and we talk about him like, you know, no chance at all. I mean, the Cowboys kind of just put him out the pasture. They were like, yeah, Joe Milton, let's try him instead. But no, how about you? Were you a masochist and watched that?
I was definitely engrossed in it until halftime, and then I kind of had it on in the background while I was doing other things around the house.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was good for a good half with it.
Yeah, the kickoff isn't new anymore. Like, that's why I watched that game last year. It was because it was like, oh, let's see how kickoff looks
what
the
What I laughed about, too, and I think you might have retweeted this, the virtual replay where they went for the measurement. Why is this needed?
You're gonna send me on a rant here.
Oh no!
The NFL is fixing a problem that did not exist with this virtual replay, just nonsense. Like, one of the most dramatic things in football is when it's like a close measurement and you get the chain gang and they run out there and it's like they have to stretch out that last link and they put it down. And you're like, oh, you know, and you just get rid of that and like, hey, let's look at the screen. Oh, look at that cute little animation they got up there. And here's the thing. I had a couple of people when I tweeted like, this is a problem that does not exist. They're like, oh, the Bills probably disagree with you. And it's like, that's not going to fix the problem from that Bills game, which was the refs couldn't spot the ball correctly. The refs still have to spot the ball.
Right.
That's not going to fix that you have a human being who has to, you know, use x-ray vision to see where the ball is at the bottom of the pile and put it wherever it makes sense. He's still doing that. All this is doing is replacing those three guys who stand on the sideline and get super excited to run out there and put the thing that's the only thing it's changing. And I don't think it's going to be any faster because that's not the long, like, that doesn't take that long. They run out there quick. It's like a 30-second process. We're doing this. We're not shortening the game. We're saving 15 seconds maximum every time they do that. It's dumb.
There's got to be some kind of geo-tracking then in the football if they're doing this virtual measurement. Is that right?
I don't think so. I think it's just like it's the same thing as the Hawkeye for tennis, right?
Okay.
Like they have cameras who can...
I feel like put the chip in the ball so we can get rid of the, you know, confusion when there's something at the goal line and if the ball broke the plane or not.
Yeah, but you have to. The problem is it's an oblong football, and you would have to, like, you can't just put a chip at the end of it because what if you're holding it the opposite way?
Yeah.
Well, it's not the way.
If
you put a chip in one end, if it crosses on the other end, then it's not going to go. So you'd have to put a chip in both ends. Oh, but what if it crosses at the side? Then you would have to put a chip in like every surface of the ball that could potentially cross the goal line, and then also trust that you have some sort of sensor that can accurately go all the way down the goal line and not be interfered with by the massive humanity that is at the goal line, right? Like, how would, it's not just a sensor on the ball, it would also have to be a sensor like on the field itself. It's just not, it's a very complicated thing. And here's the thing, I would be all for it if we were dumping money into solving that problem. Instead, we're like, oh, let's get rid of the chain gang. Like, get out of here.
Although it does seem pretty obsolete to have, you know, these guys coming out with the chain links to measure.
But it's fun. I like
it. Is it?
It's drama. I want more drama in sports, not less drama, right? It's like the automatic balls and strikes. Like, no, I'd like it when the head coach gets thrown out of the game and comes out and just angry yells at the umpire from 3 inches away. Like, that's fun. I want that. I don't want to get rid of that.
I don't know. I feel like robo umps are coming soon enough in baseball.
I know, and I hate it. I hate it. It's one of my strongest takes. Keep the robots out of the sports. Anyway.
No more AI in sports,
right,
please.
Right. It's happening. I know it's going to happen. I'm just going to be an angry, you know, yelling at clouds old man until I have to accept that it's here.
We got tons of sound to get to today for you folks on our WWL Sound Bank that's brought to you by First American Bank. Jeff and I did an interview with Saints corner Alante Taylor. You'll hear that. Also, Jeff sat down with O-line coach Brendan Nugent. Cornerback Kool-Aid McKinstry, tight end Jack Stahl, running back Devin Neal, linebacker Pete Werner, offensive lineman Cesar Ruiz, and also Will Clapp. All cuts on that you'll be hearing from in this show. Plus, talking a little LSU Tigers as well, as they are in preseason camp. Glenn West, senior writer at Go247 Sports, will join us at 5:30. Sorry, to get you all the latest on the Bayou Bengals. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. Be right back after this on WWL.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We just had the Hall of Fame game, first preseason action of this NFL season last night. And if you want to go to the Saints' first preseason game against Jacksonville Sunday, August 17th in the Superdome, you can score two premium tickets to the game and cheer on the black and golden style. Entering is a breeze. You just got to go to WWL.com/contest for your chance at a pair of tickets. Remember, you can enter once a day, win tickets to the Saints preseason showdown against the Jags from Saints Radio WWL. And that's actually the second preseason game, the first one at home. The first exhibition matchup will be not this Sunday, but the following Sunday. Correct. At the LA Chargers. And pretty soon you'll be getting ready to head out to the West Coast. Practices on Tuesday and then flying out Wednesday.
Yep, SoFi Stadium, my least favorite stadium in the NFL. We go there every year, it seems like. Sometimes twice. We'll be there twice this year.
Yeah, right.
It's coming quick. It's coming quick. We got two practices, then a day off, then one practice, and then we're out there. So, and it's a weird trip too. Like I was talking about the schedule. Like, it's kind of a fascinating decision to go out ahead of the game, practice for a couple days, play the game, and then stay there for like three or four more practices, and then fly home, considering that's a game week. That's a home game week, like you just mentioned. They're playing the Titans. Is that right?
No, they come home to play the Jags.
Jaguars. Right. I feel like they play the Titans every year. But yeah, the Jaguars and then the Broncos to close it out.
Right.
But that'll be almost like a road trip because you'll be coming home from California ahead of that game. So, no, it's going to be a wild couple of weeks.
Looking forward to just getting into that game action. Yesterday's practice, we got a little more of that real live feel because of the work they were putting in. You mentioned the players being all excited, and I think the media was as well, too. You weren't looking down at your clock going, oh, how much is left of this session?
It's the most fun I've had at a practice in several years.
I don't know how long, right?
Right, it was fun. It was genuinely fun. And one of the reasons, and you know, this kind of, we've seen refs at practices before. I have never seen a training camp with refs at every practice. And yeah. You know, like the NFL will send the crews around and you'll have them, and a lot of times they'll sit with the team and like go over points of emphasis for the season, answer any questions if there's confusion over the rules. But that's only for a handful of practices. Kellen has gone around to high school refs and had them come in and ref these practices. And now you'll get some sketchy rule interpretations because the rules at the high school level are very different from the rules at the NFL level. And the players may have some gripes about how things are adjudicated, but I do think that it creates an atmosphere where, you know, especially for the defensive backs, they're held accountable for holding, for pass interference in ways that, like, in normal practices without the refs, it'd be like, that's probably a hold. Maybe you'd have got away with it. Maybe you wouldn't. So there's an accountability level that goes with that. And that's why when, you know, there was that end of the practice sequence where Jake Haener led a 2-minute drill for a touchdown, there was a penalty, a pass interference in the back of the end zone. You had an untimed down. He finds Mason Tipton for the go-ahead touchdown, and it's like pandemonium, right? But I think that's good training. Like, things like that happen. You don't agree. There's a lot of blown calls in the NFL. You have to adjust to it. You have to react to it.
I love when Coach Kellen Moore was asked about it. He goes, it doesn't matter.
Well, it was funny because he was like, we just said that. I'm like, he didn't really say that. But that's what he meant. It was like, it's not about whether the call was right or wrong.
Right.
It's about how the players reacted to it. And I think it's a great sign for the offense that they were able to just lock in, score that touchdown. And it's not a great sign for the defense that they allowed it to get to them. And, you know, it is what it is. is. But either way, like the energy at practice and the vibes and everything, like you don't want to read too much into it. But it does feel like there's a level of energy around this team that's very positive right now.
Another guy that's positive with the black and gold, Alante Taylor, heading into a big season. Looking forward to what he's going to be able to do in this Brandon Staley defense. Jeff and I caught up with him the other day at Saints training camp. So let's hear what Alante Taylor had to say.
Yeah, when we talked to you in the offseason, you talked about, you know, Brandon Staley and how he's going to use you in this role, kind of that Jalen Ramsey kind of vision. Is that kind of what you've experienced over the last couple months as you've gotten into this?
Yeah, I think I'm playing exactly kind of how he played it, which feels good. So super excited about that, though.
Looking at your ramp up before getting here for camp, and things happened, obviously, OTAs, mini camp, but what was your offseason like getting ready?
No, I did a lot of self-scout. I did a lot of old film study on myself and figured out, you know, two or three of my weaknesses that I could have improved on this year. You know, attack those, and I feel like I've been able to work on those first four practices. Definitely gotten better in those areas, and we'll continue to work on those things. And obviously the things that I've already been good at, just keep working at those and keeping those strong. But, you know, with this new role, just kind of knowing my role and knowing the defense feels good to do. And I think the second thing I did the most was just watch film and just know the playbook.
I remember when we talked to you when you first came into the league, you're talking about your eye discipline a lot. You know, and I'm just curious, over the years, is that something that you just have to keep working on, especially in a new scheme, and just how you see certain things as you're operating the defense?
Well, that would be one of the things I attacked this offseason. With this defense, and I don't got to see too much. I think with the old defense, I had to see a whole lot, and I think that's where, like, I kind of had some trouble. With this defense, though, man, I know exactly where to look. I know what I'm looking for. I know exactly what my role is. I know exactly where to be. So that just allows me to just play freely, man, just kind of play my game. And so I appreciate that from Coach Staley, but I think that's what's going to allow me to make a lot of plays this year.
We had an alpha dog leaving the secondary with Tyrann Mathieu retiring, but, you know, you still have a big dog in you leading this team. Do you feel like that leadership role, you need to even amp it up another notch going into this year?
No, I think I'm going to just stay true to myself. Tyrann taught me a lot as far as how to be a leader on the field, off the field, here in Louisiana. I think just being myself, and like you said, like alpha dog, I'm already a leader. So I think trying to force it too much would be too much of a leader. I think you got to kind of understand your guys. We got a lot of new guys in the room. So getting to know each player, getting to know, you know, what's their why, what drives them, so that I can lead them in the best way possible. But you know, I'm just going to stay me, stay that hype, man, stay, you know, taking control in the defense, because I think that's how our defense rolls, is through the nickel. And I got to make sure I'm ready to, you know, take all the pressure that comes with that. So, yeah.
You know, how valuable was that the last couple of years, just being able to learn from Tyrann both on and off the field, and just kind of be a sponge next to, you know, a guy like that?
Man, Tyrann's a legend, bro. I think any young guy my age, and maybe a little bit younger and a little bit older, would have dreamed to play with him. But for me to be able to come in when he comes in back at home anyways, and just knowing what he's done in the past, you know, I was that sponge, kind of listening to everything he told me. But I had a lot of veterans around me, man. And I think, you know, Tyrann was just one of those guys who it kind of hit home, because, you know, Marshawn was a leader in the room, but he led in a different way. But then Tyrann being a vocal guy, just like me being a vocal guy, was easy for me to just kind of, you know, cling toward him and hang out with him off the field and see how he is as a family man and what he does in the community, so that, you know, I can take that role. Not that he won't do it anymore, but me still playing here will allow me to kind of reach out to those different groups and you know, maybe start my own foundation and things like that here in the city.
You mentioned just that with the off the field stuff, you know, giving your time. And I know recently you donated a uniform and some supplies to the Leah Chase School. Mm-hmm. You mentioned being part of this community. That's something important to you. Part of the almost, I guess, part of the job of being a Saints player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, I think the biggest thing when it comes to playing at this level, man, is, you know, giving a lot of kids hope and letting them know that, you know, you can make it from anywhere. For me, it just hits a little bit closer just coming from a small town. And, you know, I know if I was a kid in, you know, elementary school, middle school, high school, we would have had a Tennessee Titans player come, you know, my hopes and dreams would have been stronger. So being able to just do that, man, you know, just give back to the kids and just give them something to look forward to. I think I'd be cheating, you know, myself and what God blessed me with if all I did was try to put all my eggs on just being a great football player. So I just try to make sure that, you know, I'd be a great football player, but I'd be a great person off the field as well. Sometimes it can be hard, though, right? Kind of getting pulled every way. So you got to be emotionally intelligent, I would say, and just kind of know how much capacity you have within yourself, how much you can give, how much you can't give. But, you know, the biggest thing is just, you know, that want to on the inside of your heart and your mind is the most important thing.
All these new guys didn't get to experience the heat quite like this until today. Is that this kind of felt a little different out there, this temperature?
Yeah, man. I was mic'd up today, and I just kind of said it to the mic. I said, you know, this is what it's all about. You know, this is New Orleans. This is what makes the city so strong. You know, just coming out here, and the fans is amazing, man. For them to sit out there and from the beginning of practice to the end, maybe even before then, man. You know, guys were, I mean, fans were there like 8. So, you know, this is just what it is, though. And I think when you get drafted here, you know, you embrace this and you're thankful for it. And I know we'll look forward to going out to LA, but you know, this is home. This is what we do. And so it was hot, but you got to find a way. And I think we did that today. Kind of hit a low couple guys, right? But getting that first one out the way, I think guys will be ready for tomorrow. You know, once you kind of put the pads on, you start kind of understanding how to hydrate, what to work on, what not to work on, so that you can make it through the practice.
Alante, thanks so much for the time, man. Appreciate you, your game, and everything you bring to this squad. Good luck going forward this season.
Yeah, appreciate y'all. Thank you.
Alante Taylor going into year 4 in black and gold. It seems like just the, you know, year ago that he was drafted, but that's not the case. Interesting season for him last year with the fact that all of a sudden became a factor as a pass rusher.
Well, you know, it's funny because he did and he didn't at the same time. Like, remember,
that was early on.
3 of his, what would he have, 4 sacks?
Right, correct.
3 of them came in the first game of the season. So he had 3 sacks in 1 game and 1 sack in 16 games, right? So there is some level of, I don't think they utilized it.
Enough.
Because the ability to get to the quarterback is there. And I don't know if I kind of feel like they went away from it when it's like, why weren't you using that more often? And I mean, that is in large part because he was playing on the outside for the second half of the season, right? Once Lattimore and Adebo were gone, you don't blitz your outside corners very often. And, you know, and if you do, it's because you're desperate. So, you know, him playing in the slot this year, as I asked him, you know, he's modeling his game after Jalen Ramsey with the Rams, which is it's pretty cool to be able to have a player like that that you can watch in the defense you're playing in and be able to kind of emulate that.
A guy who Brandon Staley also worked with when he was with LA.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Right. He was in that defense. That was kind of his role, the star role, and that's what Alante has been watching a lot of to kind of figure out how he wants to play it. It's going to be interesting to see if the Saints decide to pay Alante this offseason. I think they probably should.
I feel like you need to.
Yeah, the problem is I think they're going to look at it and say, hey, this is how much a slot corner makes, and he's going to be like, well, I'm an outside corner.
I'm more than that, right.
How important am I to your defense? Because I'm playing in the slot because y'all need me to play in the slot because this is an incredibly important piece to this defense. That just shouldn't be the reason you don't pay a guy. So we'll see. He's one of the few players, him, Rashid Shaheed, are like the two players I look at that could be, you know, it seems like the Saints try to extend at least one player every offseason prior to the start of the season. A couple years ago, that was Marshawn Lattimore. Then it was Cesar Ruiz. Last year was Pete Werner. So I wouldn't be surprised if they try to get something like that done. But again, it's going to be like, well, are you going to pay him at the slot corner rate? Or are you going to pay him at the top corner rate?
Yeah, it's tough with Taylor and Shaheed, both those players. You feel like the arrow's still going up with those guys.
Well, Shaheed should have no interest in signing something early. If I'm Rashid, I'm betting on myself because I think he's due for a monster year. He's healthy. He knows it. And that guy, like the Saints would be fortunate if he was like, let's get this done early, because I don't think, I mean, you'd be crazy to do that.
It could be a question, though, you know, with the quarterback concerns of how good of a year he can really have, though.
I mean, someone's got to catch the ball, man.
Someone's got to.
They're going to throw it. He's going to catch it. I'm excited for him. But no, Alante is going to be a very important piece in this defense. I think the communication, the leadership in the defense is very good. And so I'm hopeful that group can really kind of carry this team throughout what is almost inevitably going to be some struggles on offense.
I definitely hope he does get extended because you feel like he's one of the leaders.
He does
in
get
that
extended?
Room. I hope he does.
I
yes.
agree. I agree.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We can sound off on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talking text line today. What you up to this Friday, folks? You're going to be going out to practice on Saturday or Sunday to see the black and gold in action. Let us know what you're up to. 504-260-1870. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. Be back with more after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Want to let everyone know that as we get into the heart of hurricane season, everybody worries about losing power, and WWL wants to help you ease those concerns. That's why we've teamed up with Craig's Electrical and Generator Service, offering you a chance to win a portable generator. We're talking about a Generac GP6500 portable generator. That's a total value, almost $1,000. You just have to go to WWL.com/contest for your chance to win backup power from Craig's Electrical and Generator Service, because when the power goes off, Craig's comes on, and WWL, Louisiana's official emergency management station. There's an emergency going on in Dallas right now, guys. the Cowboys dealing with quite an interesting situation with one of their star defensive players, and Micah Parsons, who's looking to get paid right now, and took to social media today in a long statement basically saying he's looking for a way out of Big D right now because the negotiations have really gone south there. We heard either a week ago or 2 weeks ago when Jerry Jones was in the media being public about some not really flattering comments about one of your best guys on defense. And now it's really come to a headway. We saw yesterday with the Washington Commanders, their star receiver and Terry McLaurin's looking to get traded. And now the Dallas Cowboys star and Micah Parsons is looking for a way out. So the NFC East is dealing with some issues. And we were talking about Alante Taylor, you know, looking for that extension. Hopefully we don't get something like this happening with the black and gold going forward.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, it's like we've gotten to a point in the NFL where no one wants to play in the last year of their contract, regardless of what their situation is. And it's, I feel like there's got to be something that can be, like, this is happening way too often. Like, teams just, it's either you extend someone early or you don't even get that final year.
Yeah, you commented about the graphic ESPN was showing.
Well, yeah, so the top three sacks getters for the last, like, 3 years, you have Myles Garrett with 45, Micah Parsons with 44, and I think Trey Hendrickson also has 44. What do they have in common? All three guys asked for a trade this offseason. Now, Miles got his contract.
He got paid.
So he's still there. They made him the top-paid defensive player in football. But the other two guys, I think Trey showed up to camp, but I don't think he's practicing.
No, he's holding in.
He went from a holdout to a hold-in,
right,
which
exactly.
Basically the difference is you're not getting fined every day.
$50K.
When you're not there.
Right.
Right. So that's the biggest difference is he's not writing those checks every day. But now, I mean, that's where we are in the NFL. And, you know, I do have to wonder if Micah, it can't all be about performance for Micah. It just can't be. Because if it was, he'd be getting that contract and there'd be no question. I have to believe that what goes on off the field with Micah and the podcast and just the drama
right
that's created, even like fighting with DeMarc Tank Lawrence, right? Like that happened, and he's so active on, like, the fact that he's tweeting about how he wants a trade, like that has to be a factor in why you're not committing,
kind of like the CD Deuce factor,
right. And it's like you're creating more problems than just saying, hey, I want a contract. And if a team's going to try to commit $200 million to you, that's a factor. But he's such a good player that you look past it. Like, I'm sure there are teams out there who are currently getting a trade package put together because he's that talented. Now, a guy like Terry McLaurin, I feel like, is the opposite, where it's like he is that team guy, and suddenly it's like, well, you're not going to pay me. You traded for Debo. Like, what the heck? And now, like, the only thing you hear is he wants a trade request. We didn't see a tweet. Anyway, that's... I don't think the Saints are going to be in on either guy, but...
I wouldn't expect that either.
I don't think either guy gets traded. I think it just ends up being a very long, protracted, awkward situation. And then, like, every Cowboys contract over the last few years, he ends up getting what he's asking for.
Yeah, McLaurin is also in the last year of his contract. And, you know, I know he's up there in age a little, a 30-year-old 30, receiver, right. But he's looking for that, you know, top dog receiver money. And I think... You see what a valuable asset he is to that offense, and you think he'd want to stick around with a guy like Jaden Daniels leading the way. But I also understand him wanting to get paid and cash in, because how many more years does he have left? But you figure, I don't think he's going to get that new deal. I think you're going to have to play out this contract and then hope to get, you know, that big contract in free agency somewhere.
Yeah, I'd be stunned if Washington
Commanders cave, right?
Even consider a trade. Right? Because he's going to play. He's the type of player he's going to play. It was kind of like Alvin last year. It reminds me of that situation where Alvin was going to play out that contract. He wasn't going to be happy about it, but he was going to play out that contract. And, you know, there was a point where it was like, okay, this just makes sense. Let's get it done. Right? And I feel like that's what's going to happen with Terry. I would guess the hangup is not necessarily the number. It's probably the years.
Yeah.
Because I think if you can get him, you probably would pay him $30 million as long as the commitment was 2 years. You know, if he's looking for 3-4 years and you're talking like, we're going to be committed to this guy in his age 33, 34 season, that's a different story.
Right.
So I would guess that similar to Alvin's deal where he ended up getting that extension and there was a reasonable amount of, you know, the team getting some considerations versus the player getting some consistency and some commitment that, you know, if he gets hurt this year, he's not out in the cold. I think that's probably what's going to happen.
And, you know, going back with Parsons, he's just 26 years old and definitely entering his prime in the NFL. And like you mentioned, I would imagine there's a lot of NFL teams right now in the offices coming up with some kind of package to present with that to Dallas.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of coaches going to GMs being like, I can fix him. I know I can. Get him.
We've seen, I mentioned with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, we've seen him bounce around to a couple of teams now. Has made his way to the Houston Texans this year. We'll see if he lasts more than one season. The talent's never a doubt with him. It's just the attitude and the boisterous outspokenness.
Yeah, there's a good case study to be had in, like, you can be this crazy as long as you're this good, but there's a point where the distraction does not match the production.
Right, and even if you're this
and
good,
then you're
it's like,
gone. And there's a balance that I'm not sure CD Deuce has always struck.
Well, gone right now is us. We're taking a break here on Sports Talk. Be back with even more right after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Looking at something on social media, Jeff, I just saw from a fantasy football website that, according to the DVOA rankings, that the Saints have the second best odds of getting the number one pick next year. The Carolina Panthers are the only team ahead of them.
Well, at least people are being honest about the Carolina Panthers in this conversation. No, you know, it's funny because I do think that, like, a lot of the assessment right now is being based on Tyler Shuck doesn't look ready to start at the NFL level.
Yeah, we'll
get
to a lot more of that next hour with our quarterback takes.
Right. And it's a conversation to be had.
Sure.
But the thing is, if Tyler's not ready to start,
guess what?
He's not going to start. And it's going to be Rattler. And the funny thing is, like, I feel like I've been pleased with how Rattler's looked. And I've been pleased with how the offensive line has looked. I've been pleased with how Alvin Kamara has looked. I've been pleased with how Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed have looked. I've been pleased with how the secondary has played, and Kool-Aid McKinstry is really stepping forward. I have a question on the other side. That's my big concern on the defense. I think the defensive line has been getting after it. I like how Brandon Staley uses pressure in his scheme. So it's just funny because we should be looking at this and saying, hey, I think they might win more games than maybe we thought, because a lot of these things are going well, but the quarterback is struggling, but the quarterback who's not going to play if he's not ready is struggling, and thus we're negative. It doesn't make sense to me.
We'll get more into the QB talk for the Saints when we get back after the top of the hour news break. Stay tuned right here this Friday on WWL Saints Radio. Who dat, folks?
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hope your start of your weekend is going great. Steve Geller along with Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long, hanging out with you till 7 p.m. at least this evening, as we've been breaking down all things black and gold. Saints training camp in full force now. The padded practices began on Monday. They had two other sessions. The one on yesterday's was the indoor facility, not open to fans. was definitely the most spirited practice. And I think being inside has a lot to do with it too, Jeff.
No doubt. No doubt. Yeah. And it's funny because there's been so much video. If you've noticed, if you follow on social media, like there's been so much more video of the practices this year than there has been basically in decades. And the reason is Kellen Moore is not concerned about the video getting out there, at least not this year. Maybe he gets annoyed and changes his tune.
Don't say anything.
But that's been a major difference, and that's why you're seeing so much of this camp circulating in terms of a video, is because they don't, you know, when they're outside and the fans are there, they don't shut down the recording. And so you'll see a lot of these plays on social media, and, you know, some of them have been good, some of them bad.
And as you know, unfortunately, those bad videos get turned into a little snowball into a huge one. And the negativity around quarterback Tyler Shuck just seems to be growing at a rapid pace. And I get it from certain aspect, but we still have a lot of camp to go. I know you don't want to hear that, but to be so down on this rookie who's going through a learning process in camp, I think it's really still too young to make any kind of definitive assessment on Shuck's abilities to play quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, and we can talk more about what they actually did, but I think the reason for that is because people came in with unrealistic expectations of what the number 40 overall pick was supposed to look like in his first week of practice at the NFL level.
Well, and you kept hearing, too, the older prospect is NFL ready.
Well, I mean, that's the idea.
Not exactly.
You bring
NFL
in a guy who's,
right away,
who's older and he's going to be more mature,
sure,
and ready to handle the rigors of the NFL. It doesn't mean he's ready to step in on day one of practice and suddenly be a star. And he's a little further behind than I would like to see. But we've talked extensively about this, and I have been firm from the jump that it made the most sense to start Spencer Rattler however long that went. You know, when I kept pointing to week 12 as the most likely or more reasonable
changing point.
Yeah, kind of jump off if it got to that point, because it's coming out of a bye at home against the Falcons, and then you would have a five-game stretch to end, or a 6-7, whatever. I don't math. A decent stretch of games to end the season where you can kind of get a picture of where he is going into the next year. Right? Like, it was always the most sensible path. But everyone gets excited, they get hyped up, and, you know, and suddenly now you're seeing people kind of change their opinions.
We should have drafted Shador.
Right. And for me, it's like, I'm right where I was 2 months ago. The benefit of being right is I don't have to explain why I was wrong, right? And that's why I'm not overreacting, because this is exactly what I expected. Rookies struggle early in their careers. It takes time. Like, Spencer Rattler last year didn't have to deal with this level of scrutiny. Jake Haener 2 years ago didn't have to deal with this level of scrutiny, because you had a starter. And I think that's why the Saints were perfectly fine going into this season with Derek Carr, even though a lot of people are like, why are they doing that? And Derek, you know, it didn't work out. But, like, I think we would not be talking about Tyler the way we're talking about Tyler if Derek was here as the starter, because we would be talking about Tyler the way we were talking about Spencer last year and only looking at the positives,
right,
and saying,
a rookie finding his way.
Right. And instead, because it's a competition, every rookie struggle, everything we would look at and say, okay, that's a developmental point,
it's just that magnified.
It's a loss.
Yeah.
It turns rookie development moments into losses because it's a competition, and that's why it's getting portrayed the way it is. When in reality, you have, what, 8 practices in your NFL career, and people are trying to label stuff, and you just have not seen enough. You know, and like, there was a big deal made about the 2-minute drill yesterday, and yes, it was ugly, but there's also a factor of, you know, there were some ugly snaps. I don't think it's a coincidence the Saints are bringing in Shane Lemieux, who, you know, kind of worked into being their backup center last year, because those second team snaps, I love me some Will Clapp, they were rough, right? And so you had one that was on the ground, ended up being a fumble, you had 2 sacks. So, you know, yeah, when you can't get off the ground, it's going to look difficult. You know, one thing I appreciated from Tyler yesterday is you saw aggressive throws. And that's been one of my biggest criticisms to this point in camp of Tyler, has been he doesn't seem willing to test limits and put the ball maybe in harm's way, but give guys chances. You know, when I have Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed in one-on-one, that's advantage offense. And I should be trying to give them a chance to go win a ball. I should not be throwing it out of bounds, trying to be too safe with a ball. I should be giving him chances, and we saw that yesterday. Chris Olave was going downfield. He was kind of isolated on Terrell Burgess, and Tyler just put it up to him. Terrell held him. Penalty, you know, productive play for the offense. Like, yes, it's coverage, but that's your star receiver. You go give him a chance. You know, he did throw two interceptions.
I was going to say, on the flip side, that one INT was particularly ugly, and you looked like he kind of even, you know, rolled his ankle a little.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything too serious, though.
I did ask Kellen about that after the practice, and he did finish out the day.
Right.
He did the work, so it doesn't seem like that's going to be anything that lingers. But, yeah, I mean, the first interception, I think it was, again, a low snap. He got the ball out late, and, you know, it was kind of a tip drill situation. I don't think it was necessarily a bad decision. The ball kind of hit Cedric Wilson in the chest. I think it was Rico Payton got his hand in, knocked it up. Nephi Sewell intercepted it. That's fine. Like, you look at that and you say, okay, what went wrong? Let's fix it. The second one was kind of up the seam to Cedric Wilson. And, you know, one thing that Tyler does is throws off his back foot a little too often.
Right.
In
it
situations,
just looks ugly when it happened.
Yeah, in situations I don't think he needs to. Like, sometimes you need to make that throw. This was not a case. Like, I felt like he just kind of relied on it, and I think he kind of blew a tire. And that's why the ball had nothing on it. Jordan Howden made a nice play on the ball. But, yeah, I mean, like, we're going to be talking about Tyler, and the correct way to talk about Tyler at this point is, okay, what did he struggle with his first week of practice? What does he need to work on? Where do we want to see him in his second week of practice, in his third week of practice? What does he need to do better so that by the time the regular season comes around, we can have a conversation about where he is relative to being ready to start in the NFL?
You brought up he threw two interceptions yesterday, his first two picks of camp. Hopefully that maybe loosens him up a little bit so he doesn't have that in the back of his head going forward.
Yeah, I think so.
And two big padded practices tomorrow and Sunday, back-to-back. It'll be interesting to see how he responds after that day yesterday.
No doubt.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, we'll dip back into our WWL Sound Bank. That's brought to you by First American Bank. So stay tuned right after this on WWL.
This defense is kind of like, well, if not the same type of defense I played in at Bama. So it's very comfortable for me. The plays, everything that we're doing, the techniques, everything's kind of the same that I learned for 3 years up under Coach Saban. So, yeah, and I trust Coach Staley and Coach GB at the highest level.
You just heard from Saints corner Kool-Aid McKinstry in the WWL Sound Bank, brought to you by First American Bank. And that's been one of the big positives I feel so far this training camp is going into year two. The corner is looking like he's adjusting well to the new scheme being brought in, new staff going on here. And you're expecting a new role for him this year as a starter on this Saints secondary. So, well, a lot of big things expected from Kool-Aid McKinstry, and it's nice to hear praise from your head coach as well. I'm sure he liked that as well.
No doubt. And he's mentioned it. GB is Grady Brown. He's the cornerback's coach, new coach this year, obviously.
Yeah, GB.
GB. Everyone knows GB. Yeah, and Terry Joseph is the defensive pass game coordinator. He's more working with the safeties. So, you know, it's a whole thing. But now, if I had to pick an MVP from the first 8 days of camp, probably be Kool-Aid, at least on the defensive side. If we're adding in offensive players, Rashid Cheats probably up there.
Mm-hmm.
But Kool-Aid has looked very confident. And
vocal, too.
And vocal, yeah. And excited. He wears a grill at practice now, so when he breaks up a pass, he just stands there smiling at people, you know? But, no, he just looks like a kid who came in shape, right? He said he lost like 12 pounds over the offseason. He felt like he just wasn't playing at the weight he wanted to when he got back to the weight he played at in his sophomore season at Alabama, which is when he had his best season in college. So he feels comfortable playing at this weight. When you lose weight as a defensive player, okay, can you be physical? And he says he feels confident he can play physical. We've seen him play physical even in these non-tackling practices. He's been getting after it. So, no, I mean, like, that was a big question for me. Because if Kool-Aid came in and just did not look like he had it, then the outside cornerback position was
a huge concern. Right.
Now it's like, okay, I feel good about that spot. I think he's going to handle it well, and I think this off defense is going to suit him, and the question's going to become, who's taking that spot on the other side? Because, you know, you got Ike Yadam, who, I don't know, like, I like him as a backup. I'm not sure I like him as the starter. And then Quincy Riley, who I think you got some ball hawk in there, but you know, it's not consistent. Like it's nice to have a guy who can pick the ball off, but like, I don't want a guy who's going to lose half his reps but intercept the ball on every third loss. Like, so I don't know. Like, it's tough. Like, I don't know if Quincy's ready to be the starter So it's just you got to figure something out. I really wouldn't be surprised at all if you get through camp, you get halfway through camp, and suddenly you see another face in that room.
Kool-Aid talked about also year two making a huge difference in his game.
Since high school, I always kind of had that year one and year two leap. So it's kind of falling right apart now. So I feel like I said, it's up to God. It's a blessing. And, you know, I always try to keep my head down and work. So I feel like this offseason, I put in a lot of work. I got my body in shape. I lost a lot of weight. I feel like I'm where I need to be.
What was the thought process behind that? Something you felt like you needed to do after playing last year?
I feel like I was a lot heavy last year, coming off the foot surgery, coming out of the combine. So I kind of lost like at least 12 pounds since the last game against Tampa Bay to now. So I feel like it got me playing better. I feel like I'm better in shape. Spent a lot of spent this offseason a lot hooping. That's my love right there, playing basketball. So I was able to get in shape a lot by hooping, because we all know basketball shape is different than football shape, and I feel like it got me to where I need to be now.
I'll get ready for, you know, come the regular season, Jeff, when it's time to get in the locker room. Those hooping sessions in the Saints locker room, you're going to see plenty of Kool-Aid McKinstry going against whoever in there.
I don't know. He said he's a playmaker, so he's more of a passer. I think that's what that means. But, yeah, no, like we've seen, you know, you want to see that year two leap, right? Like we always talk about it. It's easier said than done, but I think that is what you're getting from Kool-Aid right now.
Lost a significant amount of weight, too.
Yeah, 12 pounds. That's not – I mean, he's going to be playing around 190, I think, is the plan for him, which is a good size for a cornerback. He's not – it's not like he dropped down to, like, 170 or anything. But, it's always – I think it takes a little while at the NFL level to figure out the weight you want to play at. So, yeah, that's not unusual for guys to really kind of reshape their body after a year or two.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, we'll get into a little LSU football talk. Glenn West from Go247 Sports joins us right after this. Stay tuned on WWL.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into Sports Talk. Been talking a ton about Saints football. Now we're going to get into a little LSU conversation. Joining us now, Glenn West, the senior writer at Go247.com, joining us. Glenn, how's it going, man? How is the Baton Rouge practices treating you over there?
I'm sure around the same temperature as the Saints are treating y'all. So, it's been great. Got two practices in. Got another full practice viewing tomorrow for media. So we're in our infancy stages of fall camp, but it's been a lot to digest so far.
Yeah, before getting into some of that, I know today three-star defensive lineman Darius McKinley committed to the LSU Tigers, joining his brother in purple and gold. Talk a little about the defensive lineman now that's coming into this class for the Tigers.
Yeah, this is a prospect that LSU's been on for several years now. He got a chance to watch his big brother, Dominic McKinley, go through the whole process, and he's been around LSU's campus a ton over the last couple of years. Really solid athlete, a guy who started out as a four-star on most services, has kind of dipped a little bit in those rankings over the last several months or so, but a guy who had a lot of Power Four offers from teams like Texas and Ole Miss and lots of Power Four, SEC type of teams. So it's a talented guy. It's somebody that mixes in well with the defensive line group that they've already brought in. And honestly, this is one of the better defensive line classes that LSU's had if they're able to hold on to all these guys since I've been covering the team. I mean, you've got five stars, Lamar Brown and Trenton Henderson, who are committed. You've got Richard Anderson, who's committed, who's a top 70 player in the country. DeAnthony Lafayette is a young prospect who is really kind of rising up the rankings here in the year 2025. So they've done a really nice job of building out this defensive line class, and might not be done. There's a guy by the name of Deuce Gerald who will be committing tomorrow, and LSU's very much in the mix there as well.
You know, Glenn, I'm just going to keep it vague here. What has stood out to you? Like, is there any kind of prevailing observations over the first few days of practice? Obviously, there's not a ton you can take away this early, but what's kind of stood out to you so far?
Sure. I think probably the depth at wide receiver and along the defensive line have been kind of the things that stood out to me in that first practice, how it was set up. We got to watch the whole first practice for LSU, and then the next day we got to watch about 15 minutes. So altogether, we've probably seen about an hour and 15 minutes of LSU football this fall so far. So you don't want to make any sweeping judgments, but the wide receiver group was really, really good in the first day, and they've just got so many guys that they can go to in this offense. Nussmeier was really spreading the ball around to guys like Berrien Brown, Xavier Thomas, Chris Hilton, and then a guy who had a really big day that maybe wasn't talked about a whole ton this offseason was Destin Hill, the Florida State transfer. You know, everybody talked about Berrien Brown and Nick Anderson as the kind of the two big gets for them at wide receiver, but Destin Hill had a really good first day from the 7-on-7 and certainly in the 11-on-11 periods as well. So I just think there's an embarrassment of riches there from a pass-catching perspective, and we got to see that on full display. And then the defensive line did a really nice job of slowing the run game down for LSU's offense in that first day as well. So some good starts there on both sides of the ball, but we'll be excited to see kind of what happens tomorrow when we get a full two-hour practice to watch these guys go at it.
Yeah, what are your expectations for Chris Hilton this year? And obviously, fifth-year senior, dealt with injuries last year. He's healthy now. We did hear from him at the SEC Media Days. But is he a guy that you feel like could kind of step in? Because it feels like there's always one of the LSU always has, when they're good, like that elite receiver at the top that's in the conversation for the awards at the end of the year.
Yeah, no, I think Chris Hilton is, you know, the big thing with him has always been health, and he's been healthy this offseason. This is really his first offseason that I can recall that he's been able to kind of go full speed and really develop the rest of his game. Everybody knows about the speed and the vertical threat that he offers LSU, but the thing he talked a lot about at SEC Media Days was just being able to be more versatile in his role within the offense, you know, being a short down kind of catch kind of guy, a guy who can be more of a possession receiver this year because of his improved route running. Just watching those two go back and forth between Nussmeier and Hilton, I'm not sure that there is a more natural chemistry that Nussmeier has with another receiver than with Hilton. We just haven't been able to see it on the field for a prolonged amount of time. You know, we got the final two games against Oklahoma and Baylor where they really started to show their flashes there, but I think that if Hilton stays healthy, Nussmeier is going to have a favorite target or two, and Hilton is going to be right at the top of my list for a guy who will get a lot of those targets from Garrett Nussmeier in the fall.
Glenn, definitely my biggest concern, and probably a lot of folks, is the offensive line replacing, you know, four guys, only returning starters, DJ Chester from last season. Just curious your observations or thoughts on this O-line. So far, I know it's really been early on for you.
Sure, yeah. I mean, they've wasted no time going to the offensive line grouping that I think ideally you'd love to see them lean into when that Clemson game arrives. You've got Tyree Adams at left tackle. You've got DJ Chester at left guard. The transfer Braylon Moore at center. The other transfer Josh Thompson at right guard. And then Weston Davis at right tackle. That's kind of a mix of guys who have been in the program but haven't had that experience yet with in Braylon Moore and Josh Thompson's case, two veterans who have a ton of experience. I think that's the grouping that LSU would love to see kind of take off. I would say of the snaps that we saw with the first team, that offensive line grouping got about 90% of the first team reps when we first got out there on day one. Tomorrow we'll get another chance to see this group in a full practice, and I'll be curious if that's kind of the same ratio, if we get that starting offensive line in a very similar kind of rep count. But there are a couple guys that are going to be pushing as well. Carius Kearns, a true freshman that they really, really love. You could see him at left tackle. They obviously have guys like Cohen Echols and Paul Mubanga on the interior. They got some sparse playing time last year in more reserve roles, but they're a year older in the program. Bo Bordelon is a veteran who's been around for 3 years now. He could certainly find himself in the mix at right tackle. So there's a lot of guys that I think LSU is going to be rotating in and out, but that core five there is one that I think is I'm penciling in as maybe the group that ends up starting game one against Clemson.
You know, shifting over to the defense a little bit, you know, I look at this team and I look at all the positions and I can't help but look at linebacker and think, like, you talk about embarrassment of riches on the wide receiver group. Like, when you have, like, basically the entire Weeks family in there, I feel like you're doing pretty good because those are the type of players that you just want to watch and root for. But then you bring Harold Perkins back, a guy that, you know, it's almost forgotten how elite he is when he's out there. I think he's going to be playing more outside linebacker this year, and I think that's a good thing for him because I think that's what he profiles at the NFL level. What is – to me, I look at that group and I say this might be the best linebacker group in the nation. Like, would you agree with that? And what are your expectations for that group?
Well, I certainly think they have one of the more talented linebacker individuals in Whit Weeks. Like, I could certainly see a scenario where Whit is, you know, an all SEC, all American caliber kind of talent, and when you've got that guy anchoring the middle of your defense and just the leadership steps that he's taken this offseason have really been raved about, you know, when he hasn't been able to be on the field as much as he's been rehabbing from that broken bone in his leg that he suffered against Baylor. So he's somebody that I have very high expectations for as kind of the leader of this defense and to really anchor things. And when you've got that, you're able to fill in with some really nice pieces, whether it's his brother, Wes Weeks. He's been getting some first-team looks. Devon Keyes is a second-year player who got a lot of looks towards the end of last season as well. I would expect him to rotate in with Wes Weeks at the other inside linebacker spot and kind of have that trio be the core guys at those two spots. And then you mentioned Harold Perkins there. They've moved him, you know, off ball to the star position is what they're calling it, kind of a hybrid between safety and linebacker where he's going to play on the line of scrimmage, but be able to pin his ears back and rush the passer from the outside, and then also drop in coverage every once in a while as well. So I think they found a healthy balance with him. We just have to see him on the field. I mean, he's another guy that's come back from a major injury from last year, looks to be moving excellently in that first two practices we've been able to see, really no limitations. He's got no braces on or anything on his knee. He's moving really well, and I think he's the biggest X factor on this team. If he's able to finally you know, kind of live up to those expectations that, you know, many people had for him after his true freshman year, that really just takes his defense to another level from a playmaking ability. And that's something that Blake Baker, the defensive coordinator, really wants to lean into this year is aggressive nature and being able to make some more plays on the defensive side of the ball.
Glenn, I wanted to hop in here and ask you a couple of questions about LSU's secondary, and I'll start with the safety room specifically, because when we were speaking with Wilson Alexander the other day about it, he said that Jordan Gilbert and DeMarcus Cooley were the starting safeties. Just, you know, day one of practice, we'll see how things kind of change. AJ Holsey and how he kind of fits into that safety room as a free safety, the transfer from Houston. Cooley, as I had mentioned, was the transfer from NC State. Both very high profile guys. And, you know, I know that Jordan Gilbert's been in the program. Blake Baker's got a couple different chess pieces to move there, but it feels like once you get to that Clemson game, it's likely that it's going to be Cooley and Holsey as your starting safeties.
I would agree with that. I think it's just a matter of time in fall camp before Halsey really kind of takes over one of those safety spots. You know, he's a guy that enrolled in the summer, so there's could be a little bit of just learning the system and getting his feet wet without throwing him out there with the first team on the first week of camp kind of thing going on. But they brought him in. He was a top 10 guy last year in the country in interceptions. I think he had five at Houston last season. And so he's got that playmaking ability as well in the back half of the defense. And I think you'll see him. You know, Cooley's another name that I think could play in the deep part of the field, but also potentially be a nickel for LSU on packages where they want to move him up closer to the line of scrimmage. You still got Deshaun Spears, who's a really nice piece, second-year player. Javian Toviano is a third-year player who's finally found a position back there at safety that he's stuck with for an entire offseason. This is a group that I think you look at right now and there's a lot open. Like, I know there's only a four or five names there, but there's only two spots that those guys can play. And so I think that you're going to see a lot of rotating in and out with those four guys plus Jordan Gilbert. And I think that this is a far from settled group right now. But if you had to ask me after, you know, one day or 2 days of practice, I would still say that I think it's going to be Cooley and probably Halsey that are going to be your two starters against Clemson.
Fun competition for sure, man. And I also wanted to ask you about the cornerback spot, because you know, and we'll see how it progresses over the next few weeks. But man, that freshman and DJ Pickett, I know we've talked to you about him. It's going to be hard to keep him off the field once you get to the actual regular season. But not just him, Monsieur Delane, and how Blake Baker decides to use him in that cornerback spot, the transfer from Virginia Tech. I just want to get your kind of projection. I know it's very, very early in camp, Glenn, but your projection for what the cornerback room is going to look like for week one.
Yeah, I think Delane has pretty much already locked up one of those spots. You know, he was on the first team. He was getting first team reps back in the spring, and we came back this fall, and he was, you know, out there running with the first team again there in the first practice. So I would imagine Monsieur Delane is going to be one of your corners to start the year against Clemson. It's really that other spot that I think is up for grabs, and you've got, you know, Ashton Stamps is a veteran who has a lot of experience now under his belt. He's gone through some growing pains, no doubt. But sometimes if you're the right kind of player and you work the right kind of way, those experiences and those hardships can really kind of mold you into a better player for the next season. And I'll give him credit. He hasn't given up that first team spot yet. Like, they have not really gone to a whole lot of other players at that other cornerback spot. So I think he's certainly in the mix there. I think you mentioned DJ Pickett. I think for me personally, it's just a matter of when, not if, Pickett's in the lineup at the other corner spot. Whether that happens week one against Clemson or week five against Ole Miss, you know, I couldn't tell you right now. But I think the best version of this defense is going to be with DJ Pickett on the field filling some kind of role. So that's just a couple of thoughts there. I think PJ Woodland is another guy that they're going to really try to get some good reps this fall and see how he handles being a first-teamer or a second-teamer rotation kind of a guy. And then Jakeem Jackson's the other one I'd be watching for at cornerback. So got about five or six options there to settle into two spots. But I think Monsieur Delane is probably the one I feel most comfortable with saying is going to be the opening day starter against Clemson.
Glenn, looking at the main guy running the offense, Garrett Nussmeier, fifth-year senior, expected to have a monster season, that big breakout, I don't know, breakout year, but definitely expected to take that next leap going into this season. Just early impressions of him so far. I think it was day one, at least, he had a heck of a day.
Yeah, he looked fantastic on day one, and, you know, obviously the receivers had a big part in that as well. But the 7-on-7 drill that they did outside, he went a perfect 7-for-7, hit all of his receivers in the right spots. They did an indoor drill where it's kind of 11-on-11, but it was kind of a, you know, a walkthrough simulation with the defense. And he hit a beautiful go route to Berrien Brown down the field for about a 35-yard touchdown. Just hit him right in stride, a perfect pass. He looked really, 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 really good in that first day of practice. And so we got to wait and see what happens when the pads come on. And certainly I think a big part of his season is just going to be about that maturation from, you know, the turnover perspective, using his legs a little bit more. I think he's got a lot of massive potential this year to be one of the best players in the country and obviously a Heisman front runner.
Yeah, I feel like we're kind of just, these interviews, we end up just going down the line. So I don't want to leave anybody out, right? Now, Caden Durham is a guy, you know, going into his second year. Yeah, I feel like he kind of caught some people by surprise last year. Does he have the ability to be that bell cow in this offense?
I think so. The big thing with him last year was he really got going in that South Carolina game and looked like the big difference maker that they needed at that running back spot. And then he broke a couple toes in the very next game at home. And so that kind of, you know, he was able to play through it, but he just didn't have the same kind of impact that I think you're going to see this year if he's able to stay healthy. And look, he's going to be a guy that gets 14, 15 touches a game, in my opinion. I think he's very explosive. He's going to be your featured back. I think you're going to complement him with guys like Caleb Jackson and Harlan Berry, the five-star freshman from down there and at St. Martin's. But Caden Durham's going to be the guy, I think, for this LSU run game. And look, the other part of Nussmeier being a more effective quarterback is they have to have a more efficient run game this year. And I don't think that's any surprise, you know, to LSU fans who watched last year. They really relied heavily on Nussmeier's arm. And if they're able to complement it with a little bit more consistency in the run game, I think LSU is going to really reap the rewards of that on offense.
Glenn, you got anything you're working on right now we can expect on go247.com soon?
Yeah, just lots of recruiting updates. You know, this is going to be a big month of August. LSU's got a couple guys that they really feel like they're going to finish strong with here over the next couple weeks. And then just, you know, practice reports, you know, features. You know, we get to talk to players tomorrow, so we'll have some in-depth looks at some individual players. So lots to come here as, you know, LSU kind of really gets involved with their fall camp and leading up to that August 30th opener against Clemson.
Always awesome info. Appreciate your time, Glenn. Have a good one, man, and enjoy practice tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Glenn West, senior writer, go247.com, joining us there. Check out all his work. Really great stuff from Glenn. Appreciate the update. You know, you get so inundated with Saints practice, it's a little hard to keep up with the other team up the road.
Yeah, Kellen Moore did make sure to be like, I got to shout out LSU and Tulane. You know, they got going today. And it's going on, you know. And that's going to be on us fast. Like August 31st, yeah. I think, is the game. Like, that's going to be here before you know it. We're in
August 1st, baby.
We are in that month right now. So it's coming.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. You can sign off on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. Let us know what you're up to this Friday. 504-260-1870. Taking a break. Be back with more right after this on WWL. We know you can't always listen to an entire show live, so Odyssey makes it easy to listen when you want and how you want. Listen to this show and all our WWL time-shifted podcasts on the Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Back here on Sports Talk, heading to the top of the hour news break soon. We just talked to Glenn West, writer for Go247.com, about the LSU football team. And yeah, we're in August now, so just 29 days away for the season opener.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that Brian Kelly made sure to talk about, and I agree with him, is like they're focused on coming out of the gates hot, being ready for that week zero game. I think they call it week zero in college football. It's not week one. It is week one. Did they change that?
There is a week zero, but LSU's game versus Clemson is week one.
Okay, so I stand corrected.
Week zero is actually Nichols' game versus Incarnate Word.
Okay, well, thank you, Charlie, for clearing that up for week one. Because, like, I cannot stand another LSU season that starts 0-1. I'm tired of it. Every Brian Kelly season has started 0-1.
Big difference. Tigers aren't favored in this one.
Which Tigers?
The LSU Tigers.
Yeah, genuine question.
The Bayou Bengals not favored in this matchup. Clemson is at home, obviously.
Yeah, and they're at home. But, like, you just, man, if you can get out to a 1-0 start and you beat a premier program in the process, like, that just, it's just, it jumpstarts your season. A loss and suddenly you're climbing uphill the entire way. Just go out there and win that game. Like, it's an important game. And so I'm glad they're putting the emphasis on it this year.
Next hour, we're going to hear from Saints offensive line coach Brendan Nugent, who Jeff got to talk to at Saints practice, plus more audio from tight end Jack Stahl, running back Devin Neal, linebacker Pete Werner, and a whole lot more. So stay tuned on Sports Talk right after this on WWL Saints Radio.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into Sports Talk, and boy, oh boy, thank God football is back, folks, because ESPN is showing right now the Savannah Bananas on their main channel. And then on ESPN2, we've got an archery competition where they're actually shooting at each other.
Yeah, but it's not sharp bows or arrows. They're dull. It's like round. It's a weird thing.
USA leading Canada right now, 34-30. Archery tag.
Archery tag. But like no one gets it. I don't know. And we can talk about something else.
Like I said, thank goodness football is back because they are running out of stuff to show here. We kind of joke back and forth. It's like, well, on Apple TV tonight, you got the Red baseball. Sox and Astros playing. Well, what's going on, ESPN? I mean, the MLB deal, you would think they'd be showing any baseball right now. But no, we got archery and Savannah Bananas.
Yeah, I'm sure Apple TV paid good money to show this baseball game. So,
getting into more of our Saints conversation, training camp in full swing for the Black and Gold. We've got three more sessions until they head out to California. They'll be on the West Coast for a bit leading up to their preseason game against the LA Chargers and then even stay a couple of days after that before getting back in the mix here in Metairie. I'm not sure these going to be the final open sessions of camp on Saturday, Sunday, and then Tuesday, or do when they come back home finally from California, are fans also going to be out of practice? I'm not sure.
I believe that these are the. I don't know if they have any scheduled open practices. I'd have to double check. I'd be surprised if they don't do like a Superdome practice or even a Tulane practice again, something like that. But yeah, I think that the goal was to get these open practices not out of the way, but really front loaded, because you had 10 of them in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, and luckily for the fans as well, the rain hasn't played a part in canceling any sessions. That's always a disappointment.
Yeah, just that 1 5-minute period where Blake was trying to kick and it was a downpour. That's the only rain we've gotten.
Yeah, it's been very, very light mist that we got to come down.
Yeah, yeah.
But the,
is this the weather hours, Steve? What are we doing here?
Well, that's a big part of camp, because I feel like it's the sun's like out to hurt us on some days. And we've had a few where the cloud cover has been blissful, hoping that's the case tomorrow at least, and Sunday, because I got spoiled on yesterday's session for sure being inside.
Yeah, they did move back tomorrow's practice to 10:15, so it's going to be a later start. We'll see how that goes. Yeah, no, I mean, it is what it is. I think they're very happy to use the heat as an extra tool to work, right? Like, Kellen's made a point of that, you know, but they're also being cognizant of when they need to go inside and kind of take that load off. And we saw on Thursday. We saw yesterday.
I know, hard to keep up.
When they went inside, the energy level just skyrocketed. Just because you're not, you know, like, when you're out there in the sun, it's survival to an extent. And I do think there is a level to that where you're trying so hard just to get through practice that you might not be getting the peak level of work in that maybe you wanted. So I do think that it is smart to have some indoor practices to kind of cut through that.
A person that is back with the Saints after spending some time away from New Orleans, also a local guy, went to Brother Martin, LSU, Will Clapp, an offensive lineman, has been taking a lot of snaps, mainly at center here at training camp. We haven't seen him at the guard spot at all.
No, he's been the center. His primary position is center right now, and that was the case when he was with Kellen in L.A. as well.
Yeah, like you mentioned, there's that familiarity with Kellen Moore when they were playing both were with the Chargers at the time. But, you know, Will Clapp definitely seemed happy to be back home. He mentioned, you know, get to see his kids every night. Imagine when he was playing out in California that I guess the family stays here, back home.
Yeah, I think they set up shop in Metairie, but they were out there in California with him. I'd have to go back and listen to exactly what he said, but no, he's happy to be back, and you can, you know, the he's very mature. He's a much more mature guy now than maybe when he left, and that's not unusual. Like, you see guys go to different spots in the NFL, and they kind of really gain a level of just kind of gravitas to them, because they just understand.
Well, plus it's year 8 for them.
Well, right. And then you kind of learn the system. You learn what happens. You know what it's like to be a free agent, to go from team to team. He's glad to be back. But the Saints did re-sign Shane Lemieux. I say re-sign. They brought him in for a tryout earlier in camp. So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe there's some competition for that backup center spot, because I think they are getting a little irked by some of the bad snaps.
This is WWL Sound Bank, brought to you by First American Bank. We're talking about Will Clapp. He had some glowing reviews about Taliese Fuaga and the rookie Kelvin Banks Jr., comparing them to Ryan Ramczyk and Teron Armstead. Let's hear from Will Clapp.
Man, those guys, it's actually kind of scary, like the comparison, because it's very real. Tali is like by far one of the most naturally talented O-linemen I've ever been around. This dude, just like he does things that like you don't even have to coach. Like, he's literally just doing it like naturally. And then KB, like I said, I mean, the set and the way he moves around on the field reminds me a lot of Ram, his recovery ability like Ram was when he was younger. I think these two guys are on the trajectory of, you know, having those types of, you know, booking careers where these guys are like, you know, organization staples, you know, at the edges.
JN, what do you think about that?
What?
He said KB, so I was just calling you JN.
I was like, wait, hold on.
Really, really great stuff you hear about Taliese Fuaga, a guy that's going into year 2 in the NFL.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of positive things to be said about those two guys. And, you know, Will's comparison, and he was asked to make that comparison. It wasn't necessarily he just brought it out, but he was more than willing to assess
expand
it
on it, yeah.
Because he's, you know, and he saw that firsthand. Like, he played with Teron and Ryan, and then he left and came back, and then the duo is Tali and Kelvin. And, you know, he wasn't here when Teron and Ryan were rookies and second-year players, but he did see what that pairing looked like when it was at its best, you know? And so, I mean, that's a good thing to hear. And you kind of got to gas up some young players, but you see it out there. Like, my concern level should be a lot higher for a rookie left tackle, but
right.
What I've seen out there is just, you know, he's just solid. Like, there was back-to-back reps yesterday where he was kind of on an island against Brian Brzee. Brian threw a spin move at him. Brian has a really good spin move. He just kind of stonewalled it, like, calmly. Like, it didn't look like a rookie, like, seeing something for the first time. He was just kind of there. He knew where to go. He knew where to put his leverage, and he took care of it. And then the next rep, it was Chase Young. You know, I think one thing that young players, when you can, you say, like, okay, where does he need to develop? It's understanding you don't have to win every rep, but you have to understand how you can lose a rep. And, you know, the best tackles in the NFL understand how to ride a guy out of a play. You know, like, he might be getting around you, but he's not getting around you until he's way too far past the quarterback to actually impact that play. And that's what you kind of saw. And I just think he came into the league with a much higher level of technical discipline than you're typically going to see. And that's why you're a top 10 pick, right?
Yeah, you mentioned that, you know, you thought there'd be some kind of concern with a rookie left tackle. We're also on the left side of that offensive line, getting a new guard with Trevor Penning learning the position. And Will Clapp compared Penning to being a bully. Well, let's hear what Clapp had to say more on that.
What makes him Trevor Penning? Like, what are the thing, like the one or two things that are different about him than most guys playing that spot?
Yeah, he's just such a, I think that if you were describing, like, one word, is like physical. I mean, every play, he's literally trying to put people on the ground. And, like, you like to have that mindset, like, every play as an offensive lineman. But, like, a lot of guys don't. And, like, this dude truly wants to, like, physically destroy people. He is a phone booth player. I know that's been, like, a term used about him. And I think it's just exciting. I think he's taken this position change really well, and I think it suits him to his abilities. And I'm excited to see, like, him just continue to. I mean, every day he's stacking days right now, and it's exciting to see. I mean, I know the coaches are excited, and you know, he's really turning a corner there.
Your guy started at tackle and then moved inside. You know, what are some of the challenges that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, his whole career, you know, first 3 years he was out on the edge, and it's a different pace out there. There's more space. It's a different timing inside. I mean, these guys are right on you. I mean, you better get 2 feet in the ground, and you better throw a haymaker and land one with first significant touch. And he's figuring that one out. Yeah, he would probably say his first couple of days, you know, the timing in OTAs was different for him. And it just takes a little bit of time. But he's a very smart and talented player, and I have no doubts that he'll figure it out and become a high level player at guard.
Will Clapp there breaking down the play of Trevor Penning. And we've talked about this before, Jeff, the fact that, you know, Penning came into this whole situation welcoming the change. He's looking forward to moving on to a position, hopefully, that better suits him at the NFL level here at guard. So far, the early returns have been positive. I know he's still getting adjusted to things, and, you know, we'll pick back up tomorrow's session, Saturday and Sunday, and back-to-back more padded practices to get more of a feel of Penning at that guard slot.
Yeah, and, you know, the way Will described it is he's a phone booth player, which it's kind of, I'd never actually heard that said before, but it's like you can kind of visualize what that means. And it's like there's not nearly as much space inside. And we're going to hear the same thing from Brendan Nugent. We talk when you hear from him later in the hour. And it's like this, when you shrink that space, it makes it so he can get his hands on people, and he can get his hands on people quickly, and you don't have to worry about playing in space nearly as much. And it just allows his physicality to shine. And, you know, when you can get that guy in a phone booth with you, he can't get away from you. So you can physically dominate that player, and that's what that means, right? Like, you can understand when watching Trevor and watching him every rep trying to finish people off, why that's a positive thing and why that should bode well for this group, particularly in the run game. I still have some questions about pass protection and how he's going to handle some stunts. You know, it gets a little confusing when you're on the inside and you got to figure out who's picking up who. But in the run game, I think he's really going to make a difference.
Are we going to see this first team O-line in the preseason? Maybe most of the guys, not all of them.
I think if the first team quarterback is in there, the first team O-line is going to be in there. And
but who's the first team quarterback?
You're going to start with Spence. I think you do need to get these guys reps. Maybe you put McCoy down,
right?
And you play the rest of them.
Maybe gets a rest.
Or Ruiz too. Yeah. But like, if you have your quarterback who you think is the starter at that point, like whether you've made the decision or not, like you got to have your first team O-line in there. You're not going to give him the Mark Sanchez treatment.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We'll be back with more of our Saints training camp coverage. Stay tuned after the break here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk, our WWL Sound Bank, brought to you by First American Bank. Want to get into our interview? Jeff sat down with offensive line coach Brendan Nugent from the Saints at training camp. Here's what Brendan had to say about this O-line going into the 2025 season.
When you're joining a group like this, and you know, a guy like Trevor who's had three offensive line coaches, sure, in 3 years,
yep,
how do you approach kind of setting your standard with that group? And because there's language, everyone brings in their own,
sure,
mission statements, and how do you make that your room with that big of a group?
Well, the biggest thing is the best O-line rooms I've been a part of, it's been their room. Those are the best ones, right? And it's, you know, me, you know, my job in this, in when you have a good room like we have, because we have a very good room, it's kind of just steering them and guiding them where we need to go, right? Like, we can have a standard as coaches for them, and we can try and hold it to them, but the best groups I've been around, the room holds everybody accountable to that standard. So you kind of come in, we set the standard, this is what we expect, we talk about easy wins, things like that, that are every day, that, hey, like TNT takes no talent, right? These are things we can do every day that take no talent, right? And those are easy wins, and then everybody just holds each other to that standard, and then the room, somebody's dragging, I don't have to do much if it's a good room. They're bringing them along as we go. So that's kind of what we've been trying to instill since we got here, is like, hey man, like, this is ours together, right? It's not my room, it's not Eric's room, it's not Caesar's room, it's not Tyler's room. Like, this is our room, right, together, right? The better you play, I always joke about it, it's like we're coworkers, right? Like, the better you play, the longer your career is. The better you play, I keep my job. So let's figure this out together, right, and be the best we can be. So it's kind of a group effort, but really it's like those guys, we set the standard, they understand it, right? And then the leaders just make sure everybody comes along with it.
Yeah, and Eric, obviously, he was here when you were here,
yes,
before,
yep,
right? Yeah. So, yep. I mean, what have you seen, like, from when you left to when you came back in terms of the leadership with him?
You know, when I left, you know, we still had Teron, we still had Ryan Ramczyk, we still had kind of like those older guys, and Eric was leading in his own way, but those guys kind of had a big presence as to how that room went, and it was a good thing, right? And then, you know, just from afar, you know, the past 3 years that I've been gone, I've seen his play get better and better and better and better, which I knew it would when I left, and then just coming here and seeing how he's not only leading that group but leading the offense, right? It's been really good. He's kind of taken that role, and he's not the most vocal guy, but you can count on that guy doing everything 1,000% every day, doing it right, holding himself to the same stand accountable, just like he holds everybody else, which is one of the, you know, greatest characteristics of a leader.
What's an example of TNT?
All right, so it takes no talent, right? I don't know if you hear me out there. Follow the ball, chase the ball, right? Like, you never know, right? We're running, right? Those are, we call those easy wins, right? Breaking the huddle with a purpose, getting the line of scrimmage. We're not sprinting, but we're not walking, right? We're getting up there, we're getting set, we're making our calls, right? Those things, right? Hey, the ball's strong, follow the ball, right? Push the pile if the ball carrier's still up and in a pile. Like, all those things, just those are like, that takes no talent. Anybody can do those things, right? Anybody. Not everybody can block that five technique or that three technique, but when that ball gets through there, everybody can hustle down and chase the ball. Everybody can chase after the ball when it's thrown. Everybody can go run and push the pile. So that's like, it takes no talent, right? Those are the easy wins, we call, because it's easy to do, right? And if we're doing those things, it brings everybody else along. And that's the standard we're trying to set with how we play. We're trying to do it every play in practice so that it just, in the game, it's like one of those things, you do it over and over and again, you don't have to think about your door. You're just chasing after the ball, right? You're just covering down after a pass, so.
Yeah, one thing we've seen throughout to this point in camp is like false starts. Player comes off field. We saw that, yep, with Trevor in the situation with Bill today. How do you think that helps a player when, you know, obviously you kind of have to come out and sit with it? And how do you address it with them in those
situations? Yeah, so, right, like, everything has consequences, right? Like, mistakes are going to happen, right? Mistakes are going to happen. A guy's going to jump off sides. Like, we're not naive to that fact. But it has consequences, right? In a game, it's 5 yards, right? It's a big deal where we are in the field in a two-minute drill, especially like it happened today. It's like, no, get out. Somebody else comes in, right? Like, hey, if we're not holding up to the standard, right, we'll get somebody else in, right, and we'll roll. But you have, there has to be consequences for it, because if you just say, okay, back on the ball, then it just happens over, and it's just, it's inevitably becomes a bad habit, and guys don't focus. It's like, no, it's not okay, right? You're out for a play. Somebody else is in, right? There's consequences to it, just like it's 5 yards in a game. So just trying to instill that, like, no, we don't want to build that habit. We know it's going to happen, but when it does, there's a consequence. Next play, all right, now you're back in, right? But it's like, hey, it kind of puts you, because now not only do you feel like, oh, man, you're mad at yourself, but, like, you feel like you're letting your teammates, which it should feel like that, right? So it's the consequence of, all right, now I'm not going to do that again. You know, so that's what we're trying to build when we do that.
So with Trevor, you know, we've heard a lot about, you know, Collins just said he thought the move to guard was the best thing he could have done. What is it about his game that you feel like does work at guard?
Sure. Less space for him, you know, having a center and a tackle next to him, you know, like, he's strongest when he gets on guys fast, right? You know, that's kind of his game. And I remember him, I wasn't here when they drafted him, but I remember evaluating him when he was coming out. And like, we won't say I necessarily saw him at guard, but like, his strengths to me were like, man, when he gets his hands on guys, that's when he wins, right? And he could move people. He's strong, he's big. So it's like, kind of moving him there, we're kind of asking him to do the stuff he's good at, more so than at a tackle where there's a little more space, where he's not on a guy as early as he is inside a guard, if that makes sense. So that was the thought process behind it. And, you know, we're working towards it. It's still a little new for him, but it's good. It's kind of like when he gets in there, it's like, oh, I can get this sooner, right? And so you can kind of see the light bulb starting to turn on a little bit for him as we go, and we got to keep building.
And what struck me when I talked to him during, I don't know, OTAs, minicamp, whatever it was, is, you know, a lot of times you move somebody's position, they might not be a fan, but they might do it because sure, they're professional, but it might not always be, you know, something they were thrilled about. Yeah. He seems excited about it. It seemed like he really embraced it. Is that, have you experienced the same thing?
Yes, absolutely. He was very excited about it, you know, because when we talked about it, kind of just what I explained to you is kind of what what I had that conversation with him and Kellen with him, and we're like, man, we think this plays to what you do well. And he's very excited about it. The biggest thing I think for him is, you know, most of his career, he's played in a left-handed stance. It's kind of a big deal if you've only been a left-handed stance. It's bigger than a lot of people think sometimes. So getting him back in a left-handed stance, putting some bumpers around him, giving him less space and let him go do what he does well. And, you know, he is genuinely really excited about it. He's been doing a good job building here as we go.
Just one more question. Yeah. You know, the RPO game is a much bigger element to Kellen's offense than what we've seen in the past.
Sure.
Can you just break down, okay, what are some of the challenges for the offensive line sure. in that play? Because I think a lot of people just watch the quarterback and like, oh, he can run or he can pass. But, yeah that requires the offensive line to be looking forward and figuring out what's going on behind him, not get too far downfield.
There's, without getting too much into the nitty-gritty, there's just a little bit different technique that we use up front, you know, because obviously we can't go downfield, right? The refs now, with more and more teams doing it, they're hyper-aware to it. You know, so we've kind of adjusted kind of how we coach some things technique-wise when we call those plays. It's still physical. It's still that. It's just a little bit of a mentality of how and when we can get to the second level. You know, we just kind of have a different kind of set of rules, if you will, of when we can come off combinations to the second level when we're running those type plays to make sure we're not downfield. But it's still physical up front. It's still physical on the line of scrimmage because that's all legal. And then we just kind of tweak. When we call those plays, they just kind of go, okay. They have a different kind of little set of rules for coming off on the second level. If that makes sense.
Gotcha. Okay, I'll add one more.
Yep.
You know, just coming back, you know, why did you feel like that was a good move at this point in your career? Were you excited to come back?
Yeah.
You know, what kind of went into that?
Very excited to come back. You know, obviously I was here for 7 years. It's the longest I've been anywhere in the 21, 22 years, whatever it's been in this business. My youngest two kids were born here. My family loves it here. I love it here. So that was a big factor and exciting. I know this organization. I know that it's run well. I know all the things. You know, you kind of been other places and you see different things, and it's like coming back to something you know they're going to do everything for you to be successful, all those things. And then probably the biggest thing for me is I believe in Kellen. You know, I believe how he builds it, how he's going to, you know, how we're going to build this thing together, having been with him. And, you know, he and I were in touch a lot last year when I was in Seattle and he was in Philly. And, you know, I'm just a believer in how he sees it, how he wants to go about it, and how we can get this thing going back to, you know, what it was when I was here last time. So very excited to be back.
Yeah, and you know the fans are always going to be willing to sit out in 100 degrees to watch practice.
That's it's wild. I always question. I swear, I was joking with some of the new guys here. I was like, does anybody work down here?
Right.
Like, what is it, Wednesday afternoon? I'm looking at out in the stands. I'm like, holy cow, it's 10 o'clock in the morning.
It's
awesome. That's why fans for Fanatic. I love it.
Right, right. I appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff, good stuff with Brendan Nugent there. And like he said, back with the black and gold was with the team initially 2015 to 2021, then spent two seasons with the Chargers and last season out in Seattle.
Yeah, no, and I think you know, Eric McCoy was excited to get Brendan Nugent back. Like, it's an interesting staff because you have a lot of new faces, but then you brought back Nugent, you brought back Joel Thomas, right. So there is familiarity with some of these veteran players who worked with Nugent before, and obviously, yeah, he worked with Kellen Moore out in L.A., and you heard him say, like, one of the reasons he wanted to come here is because he believes in Kellen.
Love hearing that.
And I think that's a pretty common thing. Like, when you go around the locker room, like, there's a lot of belief in what he's building. And, you know, I think he's pressing the right buttons, and I like Nugent. I was disappointed to see him leave. I thought he really did a good job with that offensive line. They've kind of just run through a stable of guys, and Doug Marrone and John Benton last year, I thought did a good job. He's more of a teacher. And I think that's with this group, and Deuce kind of talked about this the other day, with this coaching staff, there's really an emphasis on development, on teaching. And you need that because it's a young group. You got young quarterbacks, you got young offensive linemen, you got young defensive backs, right? Other than the safeties, it's a very young group. And so you need coaches that are going to show up and teach, not necessarily just kind of hand people the game plan and say, figure it out. And that's a change, right? Like, in the end of the Sean Payton era, a lot of this was on the veterans to handle things on their own, and you had the players that you trusted to do that. You weren't giving significant roles to young players. That's not something you can say now.
Sorry to any Doug Marrone fans out there, but I am not was happy to see him leave the Saints.
Did not think he handled that room particularly well.
No, definitely did not help any kind of development with Trevor Penning, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was probably the ugliest bit of the Doug Marrone OL coach era. It was the Trevor Penning getting benched 2 years ago when he was starting at left tackle. And yeah, he kind of, so he worked with the veteran players. Streif, when he was here, worked with the younger players. And I just don't think he handled the younger players particularly well.
I agree with you there, Jeff. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We'll get back more of our WWL sound bank. So stay tuned right after this on WWL Saints Radio. Who dat? Just like the Savannah Bananas, Jeff and I had a little dance breakdown during the commercial break. Here back on Sports Talk as we get back into our WWL
come back
sound
to me
bank.
When you can do a backflip and still catch
and make
the ball.
A catch. That was impressive. I'll give him that, even though I'm not a fan of basketball, basically what's going on here.
Yeah, I can see that. It's a good reference. It's a good reference. I'll give it to you.
The WWL Soundbank brought to you by First American Bank. Going to get into tight end Jack Stahl, what he had to say recently at practice, and a guy that's had a little bit of a bigger role right now because Juwan Johnson's dealing with an injury. But I feel like, Jeff, even before that, we were seeing him be a little more of a receiving presence than I thought he would be in this offense.
Yeah, it's because there's no one else to throw to. I mean, it's like you can't have Juwan take all the reps. And I think it's just like Jack is not here to be a receiving threat. He's here to be a blocker.
Right.
You know, obviously he can go out and catch a ball, but I think your hope is that you're going to have a better receiving option than Jack. No disrespect to Jack. I think Jack's a good football player. I just think the tight end depth is a concern for me right
for
now.
For sure. And Stahl was asked, we'll get into our first cut here, how he feels this offense is developing.
It's been awesome. You know, you can see Kellen go out there and make this offense his own. And it's been proven on tape that his offense, you know, is a phenomenal offense when executed correctly. So, you know, right now we're really just taking the time to, you know, figure out how to run the offense correctly, get all those minor details figured out. And like I said, it's been cool every day seeing us take a couple steps where, you know, day one we're a little sloppy here and there. And then, you know, by now it's like, oh, we got this tightened up, we got that tightened up. So it's been awesome seeing the growth of what we can do with this offense. And I think right now we're just on a trajectory up, and I'm looking forward to seeing where we can get to.
Stahl's also one of those guys that defected from the Philadelphia Eagles, joining Kellen Moore here in New Orleans, spent the first 4 years of his career in Philly, and now a member of the Black and Gold, was part of that run game with Saquon Barkley a year ago in Philly. And he was asked about what's exciting about the Saints' run scheme this year.
I think it's just the style of play. I mean, you can go out there and just put hat on a hat and just play good old physical football. And that's one of the best things about this offense is it lets you be one-on-one, go out there, and, you know, as long as you take care of your guy, the play's going to hit. So, I mean, it's, you know, as you can tell from the tape, it's hard-nosed football, and you know that's what we love, and it's a great way to set the tone on offense.
Stoll, a big dude, 6'4", 247 pounds. Definitely going to use him, like you mentioned, in this blocking game. And, you know, that's something that you're going to need to have that help for this O-line that is still, I feel like, learning each other and developing.
No, the blocking tight end, you know, I kind of talked down like, oh, the blocking tight end. But, like, you need that guy.
Sure.
You know, like Josh Hill, there's a reason Josh Hill was here forever. And, you know, there's a few other guys who filled that role over the years. But
you mentioning that just now just made me think about what you wanted to talk about, too. We'll get to eventually the undervalued Saints.
Yeah, we're running out of time. But
yeah, for sure.
No, yeah, we'll get to that at some point. But, no, I mean, like, you need that guy. You need those dirty work players. There's no fullback on this roster. You need someone to get in there and block for the running backs. And I think Jack Stahl is going to be that guy.
You mentioned no fullback on the roster. Well, Stoll was asked, would you be up for snaps at the fullback position?
Listen, if they want me on the field, I'll do whatever they tell me to do. But, you know, I think specifically Kellen's offense and TJ Pagnetti, I think they do a phenomenal job of, you know, doing what a fullback would do out of 12 personnel. And so I think that they've kind of been able to morph the offense into something where you can run similar plays that you would with, you know, traditional fullback with an F tight end. So, you know, the F tight end, some of these plays does go out there and do the job of fullback is leading up, doing stuff like that. So, you know, I'm completely open to it, but I don't know if we'll do it. But if we are, hey, I'm all in for it.
Jack Stoll, Saints tight end there. And we'll be seeing more of him, like I said, with Juwan Johnson currently down dealing with a minor groin issue, although it seems a little silly to say minor with a groin injury, but we saw him thankfully been at practice in a limited fashion right now. He hasn't been MIA, which is always like, well, what's going on with the player? So, like, I feel like Sean Payton always used to say, sooner rather than later, I expect we get Juwan Johnson back in the mix for this team. But for now, at least, Jack Stoll is your tight end one dealing with, you know, the injuries there, also with Taysom Hill and still with Foster Moreau out the mix with his squad as well.
Yeah, I think if Juwan was dealing with anything significant, you wouldn't have had him out there yesterday. You would be, you know, you'd have him in your rehab work. So I think you're going to see him back. The question is, when does he get back in the team? But, you know, he was doing individual work yesterday, so I don't think it's going to be particularly long. But, yeah, the bigger question at this point is Foster Moreau. Taysom, I don't think you're really that close on. But Foster, I'd like to think you can get him back into practice prior to the end of camp. I don't know if that's going to be true for Taysom. And if you can do that and you can at least get him into the system, I think that would be very helpful for how this team and offense operates early in the season.
And we did see the Saints end up kicking the tires on a guy like Noah Fant, who ended up choosing to sign with the Cincinnati Bengals. We don't know if the Saints offered him anything.
No, they did have a visit with him,
right.
But it never really made sense. If I'm Noah Fant, I want to go to a team that you know, I don't want to come in somewhere and back up Juwan Johnson. That's just what would have been. And then also, like, you know, if veteran players typically want to sign somewhere where there's a lot of optimism around the offense. And I just don't know if that exists for the Saints right now, at least not externally. So, yeah, I didn't think that was going to happen. But, I wouldn't be surprised if they continue to look at veteran options on the free agent market.
Heading out to break right now. We'll be back with more of Sports Talk. Stay tuned right after this on WWL. We believe in the power of being everywhere. Listen to WWL anytime, anywhere. Get the WWL shows you love. That's Dave Cohen, Tommy Tucker, Newell Scoot, and Sports Talk. And the local content you crave on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps. One last segment here on Sports Talk before we wrap things up, getting ready for back-to-back outside practices over the weekend at Saints training camp. And Jeff, I know you wanted to bring up something about the wide receiver room.
Yeah, well, we got Jeff on the causeway. He's probably not on the causeway anymore. His text came in a little while ago. He's probably well off the causeway. I don't know where he's headed. I don't know which direction he's heading on the causeway, but he's on the causeway.
So many Jeffs lately.
A lot of Jeffs. And I do feel some level of kinship with Jeff on the causeway. So he wanted to talk about the receivers, and he's concerned that the combined weight of these receivers when you'd like drench them in water is like 325 pounds. That's probably not true. I think Rashid is up to 190. Chris, I think, is about 180. So it was like, yeah, you're shortchanging him about 30, 35 pounds. But No, I mean, the Saints, even with Rashid being a more physical receiver, definitely is not ever going to be confused with a big, bulky guy.
Right.
Right? So there is a level of concern. Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to be careful with how you use these guys, right? Like, you're going to have to find ways to get them in space. I don't want them being laid out to dry over the middle of the field, right? Especially Chris Olave. So I don't know. Like, you're going to have to figure it out. I'm not super concerned from Rashid's perspective. Like, his injury was not a durability thing. It was just, you know, knee injuries happen. It was kind of an innocuous play. Like, it wasn't like he got hit really hard and blew out his knee. It just, you know, sometimes your knee just goes. Chris is obviously a different type of injury, but even then, it's a very specific injury, right? Like, it's not about being big. He could weigh 20 more pounds. If he gets hit in the head, he's still going to get a concussion. So I don't know. Like, I think the big physical receiver thing gets a little overplayed in the modern NFL, where you're not really allowed to hit guys the way you used to, right? Like, defenseless receiver penalties are a thing. So I don't know. Like, I feel good about this receiver room. I like this receiver tandem. I would like to see a Terry McLaurin, you know, like a player like that in that group. I think you would be better off for it. But I don't think you're going to be watching the team this year and being like, the reason they're losing is because they don't have a big physical receiver. I think you're going to get a healthy season from Shahid if Olave can stay, you know, keep his head on his shoulders. You know, I think you're going to get a healthy season from him too. So I don't have as big of a concern about that as I think.
Well, hopefully that big physical guy for you can be Juwan Johnson.
Right, right. And I think that's one of the reasons Juwan is so important, because he's not just your tight end. He's also that guy, a guy you can kind of throw the ball to in traffic and expect him to come fight for it and come down with it. You know, like, Bub Means is a guy that I'd like to step forward, but he just hasn't shown me a ton so far in camp. Hopefully that changes. Hopefully he's a gamer, although it didn't work out for A.T. Perry. Like, we tried to give him that title and then he got cut, so... no, I mean, there's a few other options. Donovan Peoples-Jones has kind of disappeared. Didn't really do much.
Right.
And I
know Kellen, he also mentioned earlier, maybe OTAs, that one of those contested catch guys could be Cedric Wilson Jr.
Yeah, and the problem is, every contested catch, it doesn't seem like he catches it. like, both interceptions yesterday were targeting Cedric Wilson. But no, he's a big physical guy. Kellen likes him. Kellen's familiar with him. So right now, I think he would be that guy. But I still think that's kind of a wide open spot for someone to be like, hey, I want to be this big physical receiver that you kind of need, and I'm going to put forth performances that win that spot. Right now, it's kind of just, okay, no one's really stepping forward into it.
That's a wrap on today's show. For Charlie Long, Jeff Nowak, I'm Steve Geller. We'll be back at practice tomorrow and Sunday. Stay tuned on Monday for the Cajun Cannons Notebook. Have a great night, everybody. Enjoy the weekend.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.